Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's a new vision of America and the people who built it. The four-part PBS series Native America debuts Tuesday, October 23rd. That's tomorrow on SDPB-TV. Tune in at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain for Episode 1, From Caves to Cosmos. The Native America series combines modern science and scholarship with Native American traditions and oral history to bring to life the world created by America's first peoples. We're joined by Gary Glassman. He's executive producer and director of the series. He's on the phone from Providence, Rhode Island. Gary, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
One of the things that you do beautifully in this series is to make sure that this is a story not only about history, which goes back, you know, far longer than most of us thought or realized, but is a contemporary story of people living today and carrying out, life in the 21st century as members of these tribes. How important was it for you to make sure that you included those living indigenous traditions as well?
Well, it was very important. How could you possibly tell a story about Native America without hearing about Native America from Native Americans? And I think the big surprise for me was that, a major challenge of telling any kind of historical story is how do you bring the past alive? And the revelation for me was that Native America is alive in the lives of living Native American people, in their traditions, in their oral histories, and in their everyday lives.
You say that, but it's not so obvious because plenty of people have attempted to tell stories of, you know, the long ago with and completely forgetting, that these people are still alive and living out these traditions. Talk about the participation from so many different Native American artists and scholars and storytellers and all the people that you sort of, you know, musicians reached out to in the making of this four-part series.
Well, I think that's something that we're most proud of for the series, is that we, through the intimate collaboration with all of our Native American participants, we believe that we've created an authentic vehicle for their voice, for them to tell their story. And my first hire was Juliana Branham, who is Comanche and an experienced producer of independent films that have been on PBS. And we spent, she and my two other producer-directors spent the first year visiting Native American communities around the country, speaking with faith keepers and leaders and community people and clan mothers to talk about how we could make this an authentic voice for them and ask them what they would want to share. And we promised them that we would keep them involved throughout the entire editing and writing process and allow them to put in or take out whatever they thought should be done.
Hmm. Let's preview a little bit about this this first episode that will premiere tomorrow on PBS and PBS member stations, including SDPB. This is, a look at really, North America and this evidence. Is there evidence of a common belief system throughout? Talk about how you can go so many thousands of miles, for example, and see things that really shouldn't belong in the place where archaeologists have discovered them, like chocolate or, stories that are connected across great distances. Give us some background for viewing this first episode tomorrow night.
Sure, sure. First of all, everybody loves chocolate. So
right, like it's a good day when you
chocolate.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we start our story. You're right. Thank you for doing so much background research on this, Lori. To establish this idea that there was, in fact, a common belief system, we wanted to show evidence of that. And part of our strategy for telling the story of Native America is looking at it through the lens of Native knowledge and modern scholarship. And we start with the Hopi and Chaco Canyon in New Mexico. And the beauty of Chaco Canyon in terms of our story is that in Hopi tradition, Chaco was a place where people would come from thousands of miles away to share knowledge about the forces of nature. And it was an incredible place of synthesis of science and spirituality. Well, the Hopi have been saying this for over 1,000 years. They've known about Chaco and the power of Chaco as a place. Recently, scientists discovered these pots, these cylindrical pots, a very unusual shape. The only place they've ever been seen is in the Maya territories in Central America, 500 to 1,000 miles away. And inside these pots in Chaco, they found residue of chocolate, which also comes from 500 to 1,000 miles away. Well, in addition to chocolate, there were other objects found there, tropical feathers from tropical birds that came from thousands of miles south in Central and South America, copper bells that came from way up north around the Great Lakes, thousands of miles away, shells that were carved with beautiful designs that came from the Pacific Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico. And what these artifacts were doing there was not because they were valued for their monetary worth, but because they represented cultural ideas that were being shared there. So in many ways, Chaco really sets the course for us for the entire series, because here in the American Southwest is a place of science and spirituality, and the story comes alive through Native knowledge and modern scholarship.
Yeah, and there's just a tremendous amount of engineering and architecture, and talk a little bit about the sophistication of everything from language development to the ability to build really extraordinary things to feed thousands and thousands of people. How different is that view of Indigenous Americans to the view that we're often presented today about the quality of that history and those civilizations?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, in my public school, most of the history of Native America starts with Columbus and the Pilgrims, and that's missing out on at least 10,000 years of history before that, in which hundreds of cultures thrived and learned how to live on this land in ways that we can never even imagine. We often think of where I was again taught in school that they were very unsophisticated, and yet, as you said, there were 100 million people being fed through crops that Native Americans had domesticated over hundreds of generations. Those crops include things like corn, potatoes, tomatoes, chocolate, vanilla, beans, squash, and today those foods account for 60% of all grown foods in the world were domesticated here by Native Americans prior to European contact. In addition, they had their own writing systems. They had astronomy that surpassed that of Europe at the time, and they were building giant cities. Not only were they giant cities, some of them were the largest in the world. And, for instance, Teotihuacan outside of Mexico City had a population of about 150,000 people at a time when Europe was in the Dark Ages. Cahokia. Most people don't know much about Cahokia. It was a mound city outside of St. Louis, 100 mounds, some of which were larger than the almost as large as the pyramids in Egypt, the largest pyramids in Egypt. And there were over 100 of these mounds built by Native American people. And not only were they huge, but they were also aligned to celestial events, and people would come from thousands of miles away to participate in ceremonies and sports and trading food. It was the largest city in north of of Mexico City until Philadelphia in the 18th century, and it was far larger than London at its time.
And then you also have these, other interesting, fascinating stories of people, say, like the Comanche, who are not interested in building monuments. They're interested in movement and space, and they can, once the horse comes, they can really disappear and move without any evidence. Talk a little bit about, this gulch that the archaeologists and this Comanche woman go to and say, even though to most archaeologists or to most people who walk through, this is nothing. Wait, here's some evidence of this place that it was, and it's sort of sketched on these stone panels throughout the gulch.
Yes, in many ways, that's in episode 4, yeah. And the Comanche story is a wonderful story because it serves to turn the traditional story that we hear of contact and conquest on its head. It transforms that story from contact and conquest to contact and cultural continuity. Because here, the Comanche basically come into their own as a culture 200 years after contact, when they take the horse, which the Spanish brought to the Americas as a weapon of conquest, and the Comanche take that horse and build an empire out of it. The horse becomes a major part of their culture, but also their economy and way of moving around. They become a totally mobile nation. And in this gorge outside of Taos, New Mexico, there are hundreds of rock panels drawn on, carved on by Comanche artists over a 200-year period that documents the history of the Comanche from their very beginning when they first steal the horses from the Spanish conquistadors, right up until the very end. And it reads practically like a Hollywood movie. I mean, you have scenes like cavalry attacking a teepee village and warriors defending it, and you even have like the classic Western shot of the Comanche on horseback riding into the sunset. And there, again, a beautiful illustration of modern scholarship and Native knowledge coming together. We have an anthropologist from Barnard College in New York, Sev Fowles, and Comanche artist and cultural advisor Jane Myers collaborating on interpreting these rock panels and bringing them to life.
Huh. It's PBS series. It's called Native America. It's a 4-part series. It debuts Tuesday, October 23rd. That's tomorrow night on SDPB TV. You can see it at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. And in our remaining minute or so, Gary, let's just talk about handling the sort of decimation, the disease, the violence, and the subversion of these people who have survived this intentional, violent colonization and destruction.
Well, also in Hour 4, we investigate with incredible scholar Deanna Magaloni, who is now the Director of Ancient American Art at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, but she's from Mexico and has Maya heritage. And she investigates one of the only remaining manuscripts by Aztec artists and writers. It's called the Florentine Codex, and that the story of the Florentine Codex and why it's in Florence is a story unto itself, an incredible story.
And that's worth tuning in for. And that, again, we've done a little bit in the beginning and a little bit in the end, but in just about 30 seconds left, Gary, any thoughts about sort of the online collaboration in the community and how people can engage in the series itself? Sorry to give you such a short period of time to answer that question.
That's okay. Well, first of all, everybody should tune in, but also go to the PBS Native America website. And if you are, in fact, Native American, there's a place for you to upload your own experiences of how you've been able to pass on your traditions from previous generations. So I'd encourage everybody to do that. And plus, there are extended interviews and wonderful sacred stories and animation there. So please visit the website as well.